And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Viewer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to it's the summer. The season's 4 or 5 weeks away now. And we know we've been terrible because we haven't recorded in something like 10 weeks or something, Luke.
Yeah, it's probably something like that. I mean, we should apologize. But I think, is this our third or fourth season doing this? We usually start here in July or in June, July area, and then we kind of ramp up to the season and we kick off our bi-weekly episodes. So it's fun to get going again.
It is. I know that you've been busy with the whole dad life, and
yeah,
I've been busy trying to catch as many walleye as I can and be a 26-year-old individual in Northeast Minneapolis. But as Luke mentioned, I think this is our fourth season now, Luke, which is mind-blowing to me because I still remember getting the email from you saying, hey, you want to do a podcast?
Yep.
Us meeting at your place, and now here we are. We've blossomed this podcast into hundreds of thousands of downloads, listens, and
yes,
it's going to be an exciting season. What should be Minnesota's best season under PJ Fleck to date.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. So actually, let's kind of look at the excitement going into this season. I think a number of people will see the Gopher football, like social media, really pumping some of the preseason accolades that many of these players are starting to get. You know, it's all over from different media outlets. I know Phil Steele is one. I think a couple are even preseason All-Americans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, I think the headliners are Tyler Johnson and Carter Coughlin for most Gopher fans. But, you know, there are a number of other players that are starting to get some recognition as well.
Yeah, as Luke mentioned, there's been a plethora of all preseason All-Big Ten, preseason All-American, and the headliners being future top 60, top 90 draft picks, Tyler Johnson and Carter Coughlin, of which for the hashtag one of us crowd, they're both here from the metro area. So you look at Phil Steele's, for example, here you have Tyler Johnson and Antoine Winfield as first team all Big Ten players. I think Antoine Winfield's selection there surprises me a little bit, just considering he hasn't been able to sell healthy for more than, I think, 5 games in his 2 seasons that he's played. But luckily for Minnesota, he's now the world's oldest sophomore, along with the world's oldest senior being Rodney Smith. So if Antoine can play 11, 12, 13 games for Minnesota this fall, I think he can be a first-team Big Ten kind of player. He's very impactful, especially with the way he's able to make game-changing plays with his hands and his playmaking skills as a punt returner as well. You look at on the second team for Phil Steele's preseason All-Big Ten, wide receiver Rashad Bateman. That surprises me a little bit, just considering there's a lot of good receivers in the Big Ten to me. And Rashad Bateman didn't have a great season last year, considering, you know, I'll say this. He had a very, very good freshman season, especially at Minnesota. I mean, he broke 2 single-season freshman records. But you look at some of the other places, at like Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, you'd think that maybe Phil Steele would give them a little bit of recognition. Now, obviously, if we, being Gopher media people, are high on Rashad Bateman, I'm probably as high, if not higher, than Rashad Bateman on most media members in the Big Ten. But second team was a little surprising to me. I think he can hit that this year, but even still, Carter Coughlin gets second team all Big Ten at defensive end there. I think he is the leading returner of all Big Ten players in terms of quarterback pressures. And then Demetrius Douglas is second team all Big Ten as a punt returner.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Is it just the fact that he got a touchdown?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I don't know if this is recency bias, considering he had the one punt return against Wisconsin, kind of changed the game there a little bit. But
I feel like special teams awards in general, like outside of maybe kickers and punters, like it's a little bit of a flip of a coin, right? You kind of got to project a little bit. You don't even know if some guys are even going to return kicks and punts, you know, year in and year out, based on what kind of role they play, you know, in the offense or in the defense. But that was a little surprising to me.
That was. So again, I'd love for Demetrius Douglas to live up to that come the fall here. On the third team, the first running back that is mentioned here is Mohamed Ibrahim getting third team recognition. I think it's a little interesting that Phil Steele puts him there, considering I have him number 3 on the depth chart. I think as does Minnesota. From the last I talked to my sources on the offensive staff, he gets third team. Daniel Fa'alele, the Australian monstrosity, a right tackle, third team. And then Jacob Herbers, our guy, my guy, Jacob Herbers, with that 40-yard net punt every single time. gets third team all recognition. Thomas Barber rounds it out with a fourth team. I think it's just interesting to kind of go through that list and then kind of think about what the expectations are for each one of those players. I mean, you have guys like Thomas Barber going into his fourth season, third one as the starter. He's got over 200 total tackles, yet he's fourth team. And then we don't even mention Kamal Martin here, who, if you missed it in the offseason here, the Senior Bowl, we had him on a very short list of linebackers they're going to be watching in terms of to make the Senior Bowl and then probably get drafted in the NFL there. Kamal Martin's not even on this list. And I think if you look at returning production there, Kamal's been extremely inconsistent. Now, in theory, him going into his fourth year as a linebacker, his fourth year in a collegiate defense, kind of being now without Blake Cashman, or hopefully the playmaker among this unit. It's interesting that Kamal Martin doesn't get recognized yet. You have someone like Mo Ibrahim, of which, again, I'm not turning this into a "let's bash Mo Ibrahim podcast here, but where the hell is Rodney Smith?
I mean, well, here's the really funny thing is Rodney Smith, I know, is coming off of injury, but so is Antoine Winfield. And technically, Antoine Winfield's coming off back-to-back injured seasons, right?
Correct.
So, like, if you're using the he was injured justification, that's a little surprising to me.
We'll talk about it on the next episode of this podcast where we're kind of going to preview the offense so everybody can get reacclimated with the names. But I will remind you, Rodney Smith is the alpha in this offense, where I think to start this season, you're going to see Mo Ibrahim split the – I shouldn't say split. I think it's probably 70-30 in terms of touches with Rodney Smith. And Mo Ibrahim, as Shannon Brooks continues to go through his rehab, continues to get back up to game speed. And then once Shannon Brooks is back in October, I don't know that there's going to be a ton of touches for Mo Ibrahim to go around. But the fact that Rodney Smith is still going to be the alpha here, running into what is going to be his least loaded box of his entire career here, a guy we're talking about who's averaged over 4.5 yards a carry, running into a lot of 7-8 man boxes. Plus, it's arguably going to be his best offensive line run blocking wise with Fa'alele, Curtis Dunlap, Blaze Andrews, Connor Olson, and then whoever Minnesota has at left tackle. I just think it's interesting that Phil Steele doesn't put Rodney Smith on there. So I just,
yeah.
If I was going to do that, I would put Rodney in Ibrahim's spot there and then kind of see how the things went from there. But again, Phil Steele has been around a lot longer than I have.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the transition and flux within the roster, especially going into this season. Obviously, I think the last time we chatted, we talked about a couple of guys that transferred in. I know that's changed since we last chatted as well, but we have a number of players that have also transferred out. This is really what modern college athletics is about. It's about finding a good fit for you as an athlete, not only from a playing time perspective, but also culturally, etc. So, Ryan, I know there are a number of guys that transferred out. Maybe you can give a quick update on those guys who we expect not to see on the roster for those that haven't been paying close attention to your work on Gopher Illustrated.
Yeah, there's been some transfers out here in the last couple months. A couple that shouldn't surprise anybody are from Woodbury, Minnesota. One being running back Dominic London, was buried on that depth chart, really wasn't going to be seeing any time here in the foreseeable future. He decides that he wants to go find playing time somewhere, and he's going to go up to Grand Forks to do that, where James Johannesson also is now. So you have a couple of former Gophers up at the University of North Dakota. A Woodbury tight end by the name of Nathan Birch, someone that once again kind of saw flux in his Gopher career here, where Minnesota decided to take Nathan Birch instead of Noah Gindorf, something where Tracy Clay's recruiting decisions within that staff a little bit suspect. Minnesota tried to get on him late when Fleck took over. He decided to stay with NDSU. Now, again, Noah Gindorf hasn't done a lot at NDSU yet, but I know from talking with their coaches up there, they're extremely high on him. They've had some other older guys come through that program that are no longer there, and I expect Noah to see a lot of time there. And I think it's also telling that Nathan Birch didn't transfer to another Division I institution. He went to Minnesota Duluth. Now, you can go to an FCS school such as Illinois State or North Dakota, where Dominic London went, and you can still play immediately. But he decided to go the D2 route, or maybe that was the only options presented on the table for him. So you have a couple of in-state kids going there, and then culturally, a couple of guys that didn't make it from the junior college ranks. And I think that's maybe going to lead us into a little bit of a discussion there, Luke, is Kelvin Clemens was kind of the big name on signing day, where Minnesota was able to flip him from Kentucky, a top 25 program last year. Sight unseen, they're able to get him signed. Minnesota really needed the corner depth, considering some of the issues that they've had there. And Kelvin Clemens goes through the spring. And then once the spring ends, Kelvin Clemens decides he's going to leave. So what happened? There was some things there behind the scenes where I think Kelvin underestimated what it was like to be a full-time Big Ten player at Minnesota, from the schedule grind to the things that are expected by PJ Fleck among his players, not necessarily thinking that that jived well with Kelvin, and consider the fact that I think he thought he was going to be further along than he was on the depth chart. But he had guys ahead of him that were performing better this spring. Kelvin was a different body than what Minnesota had had there at corner. He's 6'1", very filled out, but he was extremely raw technique-wise. So he was probably sitting as the number four corner on the depth chart of, again, you're still a backup at that point, but he decided he wanted to go to Houston. So he transferred out. And then one of the signees that Minnesota had in their 2019 class by the name of Jarvarius Owens from Northeastern Oklahoma A&M, somewhere where Clay Patterson was the head coach there. He recruited Owens there. What happened there? Because Minnesota released him from his NLI, which you don't see very often, and let him choose where he wanted to go. Well, there were some things behind the scenes there, not academic related. He was fine academically. There were some off the field issues that arose in between February and May that PJ Fleck didn't feel comfortable bringing him into Minnesota. So he released him from his national letter of intent. He's deciding to go to Houston with Kelvin Clemens. So we'll see how it kind of plays out there, though. But I think you look at the junior college route for PJ Fleck, and he talked about it in his opening press conference, was he doesn't want to go to a lot of junior college players just because he didn't think that they fit well within what he's trying to build here. And I think, as you would tell me, Luke, I think that the numbers here may speak for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm not terribly surprised given, you know, the public statements he's made on junior college just in general. But, you know, in the same respect, you know, junior college can be a really good route to add depth, especially when you need immediate impact, where the Gophers kind of need it, especially in the defensive backfield, right? So I'm a little disappointed some of those haven't worked out, but there's still a number of junior college guys they've brought in. So,
right. I mean, you look at the last three classes, junior college-wise, the junior college names that they've at least had committed at one point. Ahmad McCullough was a linebacker from Kansas. Minnesota tried to get him as a full qualifier. Well, then other people saw that he committed to Minnesota, dug into him. Ahmad McCullough then goes to Maryland, because if you can go to Maryland in June instead of staying in El Dorado, Kansas for another 6 months, you do it. You look at Jarvarius Owens. Minnesota signs him out of an Oklahoma junior college. He has some off-the-field stuff come up. PJ Fleck releases him from his NLI. He goes to Houston. Damarian Williams, another cornerback from the Kansas JUCO route. He is committed to Minnesota, and then he has some off-the-field issues come up. Minnesota has to depart ways with him. You have Chris Daniels, a guy from a Texas bounce back. He goes to, I believe, an Alabama junior college, and Minnesota parts way with him after some off-the-field issues arise again. Juwan Mitchell was a linebacker that had committed this past spring from another Kansas junior college. Well, he's a full qualifier to some schools, and Minnesota wasn't among them. So they get him committed, and then Texas finds out about him. They say, hey, we have a spot open. And Minnesota's like, well, there's not a whole lot we can do there. So if you want to go to Texas and play ball instead of being in El Dorado, Kansas for another 6 months,
yeah,
you go do that. And then Kelvin Clemens as well.
I mean, it sometimes just boils down to it's a numbers game, right? Like,
yeah, some of that, and that's what I'm trying to point out, where some of it's a numbers game. But I've also mentioned, I think, with 3-4 of those guys that Minnesota gets them committed, and then just – off the field issues happen, and PJ Fleck got to depart ways, because you look at the only junior college players that are really left scholarship wise from Minnesota on the roster right now are Keontae Schott, someone that Minnesota just got in here in January, and then Jason Dixon, who maybe the front runner to start at left tackle. So 2-for-8 there on the junior college route isn't a great percentage. So I just think it's worth continuing to monitor as we continue to follow PJ Fleck's recruiting.
Yeah, we did have a couple of transfers that came in, though, right, that we probably should touch on. I know there was the guy from Notre Dame. I think he got an extra year of eligibility, and then there's also another defensive back. So, you know, they did lose a defensive back, but they also found a way to get one in as well.
And one that we at 24/7 Sports had rated as, I think, a top 150 national player coming in. Someone that – so the name, Michigan cornerback Benjamin St. Just. He is a graduate transfer, but he has 3 years of eligibility remaining. I mean, he graduated from Michigan in 2 years. I mean, this kid's incredibly smart. He's from Canada originally. That's where he came to Michigan from. Someone that has a lot of size and a lot of speed. He's 6'2" and he runs very, very, very well. So what the story is that his freshman year in 2017, he played 12 games on special teams for Michigan, kind of the way that most Big Ten teams break in, guys that you think are going to be immediate contributors for you. He put them on special teams, and then going into 2018 this past season, he had dealt with some hamstring issues, and he didn't exactly see eye to eye with Jim Harbaugh on those, where Jim Harbaugh tried to get him to get off the 85 in terms of every Big Ten team has 85 scholarships to use football-wise. And what Michigan wanted to do was say, hey, medically, you just can't go. And we're going to take you off the 85. You'll still get your full scholarship here, but we just don't want you on the roster anymore because we think your hamstring's that bad. St. Just didn't agree with that, and so he decided to graduate transfer. So he's going to be coming to Minnesota here now. And I know the next question you're going to ask me, Luke, is, well, how's his hamstring? Well, I'm going to tell you that he's told me anyway that he's been fully cleared since February, and he just arrived on campus here in the last 24, 48 hours. So Minnesota's going to be getting him to add to this cornerback room that really needs some immediate talent and some immediate depth there. Then they also have Notre Dame defensive tackle Micah Dew-Treadway, someone that was here this past spring. We talked about him, looks to be starting for Minnesota as their nose guard. Well, the good news that Minnesota got was they have an extra year of eligibility with him now because they went to the NCAA with Notre Dame, both schools cooperating and saying, hey, can we get a 6-year of eligibility? Because there was a year that he missed because of injury. We would love to apply that here to Minnesota. Notre Dame said, yeah, that's fine. Minnesota wanted it, and so they have a 6-year. So technically, Micah Dew-Treadway should think of him as a junior right now, where he's also going to be back for 2020. And you look at that defensive tackle room. Minnesota needs to get some depth. They need to get some guys there that are going to be ready. And the fact that you could have Micah Dew-Treadway there for another year, I know, is something that Jim Panagos on that defensive line is a very big fan of.
Yeah. So I guess when we talk about JUCO recruiting, obviously that's a way to supplement. But the life of this entire program is recruiting, and primarily the focus has been and will continue to be high school recruits. I know that the Gophers in large part have had a really successful couple of weeks. But prior to that, they did have a number of guys that were committed that have since decommitted. And I know that's a part of recruiting, and that's something you basically can't get around. But it does strike some fear into a fan base. So you want to talk a little bit about some of those decommitments and how things have gone about there?
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of the lifebloods of GopherIllustrated.com, of which, again, I will encourage you, if you haven't already, check out Gopher Illustrated. If you want to become a new member, it's literally $1. $1 to join. That's like a pack of gum. You can literally get a cup of coffee for like $3.50. You can join Gopher Illustrated for the first time for $1, or it's 30% off for an annual subscription. I think if you're on the fence, try the $1. I mean, and see what you think about the community. Our message board is our lifeblood. That's where I post a lot of things that I just don't put out on Twitter. I mean, if you have any question, Gopher football or Gopher basketball related, Ryan James and I can usually get it answered here within a couple hours. But recruiting-wise, I mean, this is going to be the rest of the podcast, as we have so much to talk about recruiting-wise that we'll get into offense next week. And decommitment-wise, we talked about Juwan Mitchell, where Minnesota got him committed here this past spring, and then word got around that he could become a full qualifier potentially. Minnesota didn't have a spot available for that, and there was some behind the scenes about, I don't think that Minnesota could get him in June. And so if you're Juwan Mitchell and Texas tells you that they can take you immediately, you're just going to go ahead and do that. Yeah. So if you're Minnesota, not a lot you can do there. I think the one that has some people perturbed is Winona's Aaron Witt. One of the first commitments for PJ Fleck in this past class was in the fall, where Aaron Witt decided from Winona there that he was going to commit to Minnesota. He visits Minnesota 4 or 5 times here during the spring, and then Aaron decides that he's going to reopen his commitment. And Minnesota's kind of confused by it, but Aaron wanted to go see some other places. And Minnesota was like, all right, well, just so you know, you maybe could come back, but we're probably going to take your spot. And he's like, yeah, well, okay. I mean, I understand how it goes. And so Aaron Witt decided this past weekend he's going to go to the University of Iowa. And Minnesota has moved on to some other defensive line targets, including one from Ohio that I think is going to take Aaron's spot there. And so best of luck to Aaron. But, you know, there are just a lot of things behind the scenes that were giving Aaron a lot of anxiety, it sounds like, with his decision. And, again, if he's a 17-year-old individual that this is the biggest decision of his life, and he wants to explore things, Minnesota understands, but they also understand this is a business and they have to go out and find somebody to replace him. And so the other only other decommitment here so far has been an Illinois defensive tackle by the name of CJ West. So one of the first commitments for Minnesota in this cycle, and he decommitted this past May. I will tell you this, I don't think Minnesota and CJ West are going to get back together, and I don't know that CJ West knows where he's going to go yet. He hasn't committed anywhere. He really hasn't taken many visits much to many different schools. And I'm beginning to think that I think Minnesota thought that maybe they shouldn't be taking CJ West. I know that they got a guy that they had ranked higher on their board than CJ at defensive tackle, who's now committed. So we'll see what happens. But best of luck to CJ there. And again, I think it gets misconstrued that only with PJ Fleck recruiting do all these decommitments happen. And by all these decommitments, it's like three here in this class. Now, again, I'm well aware in the last cycle there was seven or eight. It's just the way it is in college football recruiting in 2019. I mean,
yeah,
with in today's day and age of social media, in today's day and age of off-the-field issues arising, in today's day and age of everybody wanting to have their say with a 17-year-old individual and pull him so many different directions that they think they know what's best for him. It's just the way it is nowadays. But and so whether it's – go ahead.
Here's the thing that's super interesting to me is like we – people get hung up on the whole fact that people decommit, right? And that's all well and good. But there are like we just went through a number of transfers. Like this is just the way that modern college athletics goes. They're trying to find the best fit, and they don't particularly care when it is, whether it's during a commitment when they haven't signed a national letter of intent, right? Or if it's even after they've signed. I mean – If you're a member of Gopher Illustrated or you follow 247 at all, you know they have this transfer poll, or is it transfer portal or poll? Yeah, portal.
Transfer portal.
Yeah,
and, yep, just I mean, like the NCAA one.
Right, the NCAA has this portal, and now 247 follows this, and I find that actually pretty fascinating because you'll actually get pretty accurate metrics to see what is the trend really, because it's been a trend for a long time. It's just nobody tracked it at a really granular level, except in basketball. They track it a little bit, maybe a little bit better than football, but now with the way the NCAA is doing this, you'll get a lot better perspective on how transitory student athletes are. You know, they don't stick around schools as much as they used to back in, you know, the 80s, or, you know, basically predating me.
It's, I think you bringing up the transfer portal is a great point, because it's seemingly every year more and more and more kids are entering the transfer portal thinking that I don't want to work my way up the depth chart or for whatever reason. And then, I mean, you could tell people as good as anyone, Luke, that especially on the basketball side of things, so many of these kids that put their names into the portal, I mean, what percentage of them you think actually go to a level or a different school that's on the same tier or maybe even a tier above, like 10-15% maybe?
Yeah, it's really small.
And so that's where you see, even once you get the players on campus, I mean, it's a battle every – I mean, I wish I could tell you some of the stories behind the scenes here, but I know some sources listen to this, and I'd really like to keep my job and my Gopher Illustrated members happy. There's battles every week to try and keep kids at Minnesota or, you know, happy and different things like that. And so decommitment-wise – it is what it is, and that's – I'm not concerned about it right now. I mean, if there were a bunch of kids, you know, with different reasons, or I guess all the same reason because it's, you know, PJ Fleck or something a Gopher coach told them, I can tell you more times than not, I'd say 90-95% of the time, even higher than that, that's not always the case.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like this, I don't think this is going to get less, the number of transfers and decommitments. I think it's going to get more. It's going to be more common. And I think people are just going to have to be comfortable with it. And And the fact of the matter is, like, these are 16, 17, 18-year-olds, I guess if you're doing the junior college thing, maybe up to 20, right, that are trying to make a decision. And this is probably one of the first kind of independent decisions that they can make that's really going to impact their life on a large scale. Give them the room to make that decision. It's not your decision. It's their decision. Let them make it. And quite frankly, like, they prioritize, a lot of times they want to prioritize playing time or where they're feeling they're receiving the most love. Let them do that. That's their prerogative.
I think that's a pretty, yes. It's just don't tweet recruits. I
don't, yes,
think
don't
helping,
do it.
But again, just let the coaching staff do what they're doing, because, I mean, as I'm about to tell you, they're having a lot of success. They're having a lot of success doing it right now. They currently have 21 commits. They have the number 20 overall class in the country and the number 2 class in the Big Ten West, according to 24/7 Sports right now.
And that'll change a lot still, right?
It will. Yes. Yeah. And I feel like I fought this vendetta last week where Minnesota has their summer splash, of which I'll get into what the heck that was, what these kids are, who they're about, how good are they. But then I just had people, because I tweet out like, hey, you know, Minnesota has a top 25 class right now, of which they did. It's accurate. It's factual. And people are like, well, yeah, but it's going to change. They're going to be in the 30s and 40s again. Like, why isn't Fleck recruiting better? And my point to you people is I think you need perspective. And so what I tried to do, and you can go and check my Twitter for the big thread here. I don't want to get into a bunch of it, but Minnesota, let's look at the last 6 years here. So you have Jerry Kill in his prime, to Tracy Clays, to PJ Fleck at the beginning, to PJ Fleck right now. And you look at Minnesota's class score, of which is the number of points each commit is worth based on their star ranking and different factors like that. Well, Minnesota's class ratings, or their class scores here the last couple of years, are both over 200, and that didn't happen in any other year this decade. Their average commit rating was 86.4 and then 85.95. I'm just going to say 86 because it's a lot easier. That's the highest that Minnesota's had in back-to-back classes. It's the highest commit rating since one of Brewster's classes when he brought in. And where I think, you know, folks are like, well, yeah, they only finished 32nd and 44th, which is true. In 2018, their 209 class score was good enough for 32nd, 8th in the Big Ten. And then this past year, it was 44th nationally and 10th in the Big Ten. But I think what you need to know is the number of Big Ten schools recruiting at a high level is as high as it's ever been, especially in the Big Ten West, because in 2018, there were 7 Big Ten schools in the top 30 in recruiting rankings, which is the highest it's been in over a decade. And then last year, there were 8 Big Ten teams in the top 35 for recruiting rankings. I mean, it's absurd just the way that the Big Ten West here in recent years has been able to recruit. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald has seen a lot of success on the field the last 2 years, especially in the Big Ten. And now he's finally getting some players that are seeing that and they want to jump aboard. You have Kirk Ferentz with the number of guys that Iowa's been able to put into the NFL of late. They're seeing an uptick in recruiting. Paul Chryst is seeing the dividends from their winning seasons this past decade. And even Scott Frost and Jeff Brohm have been recruiting at a high level here. And so the rest of the Big Ten West is up the ante. And PJ Fleck has done his part to try and match that, because Minnesota's national class ratings before PJ Fleck got here, 67th, 64th, 63rd, and then 46th. I mean, if you don't like PJ Fleck recruiting, man, would I hate to introduce you to what what Jerry Kill's class ratings were.
Yeah.
And so I think the point here, what I'm trying to get at is, I think PJ Fleck is recruiting well. I think he's putting Minnesota up in that same tier as the rest of the Big Ten West, and we'll get into it a little bit later where, I mean, the biggest thing you have to do is get the talent here. And then it's about development and putting them in situations to make them look as good as what, you know, they were potentially rated. But the rest of the Big Ten West is recruiting is at a high of a level as we've seen, or at least I've seen since I've gotten into the industry in my 8-9 years here. And PJ Fleck at least has them in the same tier. And how do they improve that? I mean, how do they get, you know, keep these top 25 classes coming?
You got to win.
You got to win, and then you got to win again, and then you got to keep doing it and change the perception.
Well, think about it this way. The majority of times what happens is you always see a school have a slight bump in recruiting when they have a coaching change, right? I think there'd be data to support this. I haven't actually looked this up, but this feels pretty consistent with my experience following Minnesota recruiting, right? So you've got Brewster, his best years were early in his tenure, maybe the first two or three, right? And then the same with Kill, et cetera. But you have to then stabilize that with winning. And like you said, you have to win again. And that's where you see, you know, Iowa, Wisconsin, they've probably recruited at the highest level in the Big Ten West, probably because they've won the most, right? And now, to your point, Pat Fitzgerald, he's starting to win. Right now you're facing Nebraska, who brought in Scott Frost, and they're recruiting well, probably because it's early. Plus he had the Central Florida, he's got that Central Florida pedigree that he can fall back on, right? So to your point, it has gone up, but at the end of the day, you have to win. You can't just be a splash for a couple of years. You have to back it up with some good proof points of either putting guys in the NFL or winning.
Yeah, I couldn't really state it any better. Minnesota just needs to win, then keep winning, and then you can get into more living rooms with PJ Fleck, and PJ Fleck spends a lot of time and energy recruiting. He's mm-hmm. the modern-day head football coach in that respect, where he lets Kirk Shiroka run his offense, he lets Joe Rossi run his defense. He oversees it all, but he knows that the lifeblood of any college football program is recruiting, and he puts a lot of time and energy into that. But for him to take that next step, you have to put it on the field. And that's even if Minnesota wins 8 games this fall, of which I think they're extremely capable of. Side tangent here, Luke. Did you see that I tweeted yesterday about one of the sports books? FanDuel.
Oh, I did see that.
Minnesota has an over-under at regular season wins-wise. It's yeah. 6.5.
You know, that is somewhat surprising, but in the same respect, if you're a sports book, like, what number are you going to pick? You're not going to pick an integer, right? So you're not going to pick 6 or 7, right? You're going to have to pick a half. So probably the safe bet is 6.5, but 7.5, are you going to get enough people to jump on it? I don't know. Maybe it's right. It seems a tad low, but maybe.
And some of the people that know Vegas more than I do are like, well, yeah, but look at the number attached to it. Again, I'm not a big Vegas guy, but I know that I think if you were to put $100 down and Minnesota gets the over there, I think you win like $55 or something. But it's also like, well, yeah, that's $55 more than you have in your pocket. So it's wild there because Purdue, they have them at over under 8 wins. That was higher than Iowa, Northwestern. Mm. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, this Jeff Bromlove is getting out of control because 8 regular season wins, and I can guarantee they don't have as good of a crossover schedule as Minnesota has. So back to the point here, even if Minnesota wins 8-9 games overall this fall, you're not going to see the bump in this 2020 class necessarily,
right?
Because number one, I don't think Minnesota's going to have a lot of spots available, and it's kind of the lag effect to where then PJ Fleck can use that on that 2021 class to really get, you know, maybe the Riley Malmans, the Justice Sullivans of the world to pair with Ethan Kaliakmanis, who is the Greek rifle that they're really counting along.
Mm-hmm.
The highest rated Gopher commit since Moses Alapate at the quarterback position. So I think the big point I'm trying to prove here is that Minnesota's still got a top 20 class right now. Here, as we sit here today in the year 2019, it's still the number 20 class in the country right now. And PJ Fleck has put a lot of time and energy into doing that. I think their class average right now is around that 85, 86 number. And if history shows anything, I mean, there's a number of kids that could get bumps here in this current recruiting class for PJ Fleck to raise that number back over to the 86 number where Minnesota really wants to be.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, maybe the competition, you know, they're going to face here in the Big Ten West. I think we would both agree that, you know, it's a pretty equal playing field right now. I don't think anybody has a huge leg up on anyone. Maybe Wisconsin does, just with, you know, the historical precedent they've set of winning and kind of dominating. But it feels like, maybe I'm wrong, I just don't know for sure, but it seems like everything's pretty even. Maybe Illinois is the lone one towards the bottom. But how can we kind of track, or how can we pit these different schools against each other, you know, maybe from more of an analytics perspective? I know you and I are both big Bill Connelly guys. By the way, he's at ESPN now. That was a big surprise to me.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. And good for Bill. I mean, he's put a lot of work into the S&P and the different things that he does with advanced analytics in college football. So happy to see him get recognized and probably get a better paycheck because of it. So you mentioned it, that when you look at 2019 in the Big Ten West, I think it's very even. I think there's maybe one or two different tiers, but I think you can really throw Nebraska, Northwestern, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Purdue all into that same bracket in terms of, I could tell you a plausible scenario more times than not where each one of these teams has a realistic chance of winning the Big Ten West come November. And so if you have all those different teams competing in 2019 in the same tier there, and then you look at the recruiting rankings and essentially they're all in the same tier now with Purdue and Northwestern recruiting, Purdue, Northwestern recruiting as well as they've been, Iowa, Wisconsin, as well as they've ever been, even Minnesota. So what does that mean? I like to look at something from Bill Conley, and I saw one of the Michigan coaches tweet about it yesterday, and I thought, man, this would really, really kind of resonate the point that we're trying to make home. So there's three things that college football coaches have to do if they're going to be successful. Number one is talent acquisition, which is recruiting. And now Minnesota's done that here the last 2 years. It's the best back-to-back recruiting classes here in the last decade at least, if not the internet era. And so Minnesota's recruiting well, especially in comparison to what it had been in previous years and in relation to the rest of the Big Ten West. They're on the same tier as the Wisconsins, the Iowas, the Northwesterns, the schools that you want to be competing against that have had much more consistent success in the last decade. So and I guess Minnesota's in the same tier there.
Yeah, so I guess if we're trying to look at this from a metric perspective, there's a couple ways that we can look at talent acquisition. We can look at recruiting rankings, right? But there's also like that isn't completely the gold standard, but that's the best metric we can track right now, right? That's like the only way that we can have something that is that's consistent. Probably the composite is the best way to track this, right?
Yeah, the 24/7 composite would be the best for my money. And again, if you don't believe in star rankings, that's fine. I mean, that's not going to hurt my feelings or anything like that. But I'm trying to find the data that brought up this past week where.
But there's really no other way to do this because, like, yeah, the star rate or the star rankings might be somewhat flawed, and yeah, guys slip through the cracks. But for the most part, by and large, it does a good enough job to be a representative metric to quantify talent acquisition.
Exactly. And so if you look at the 4-year average of NFL players drafted from 2013 to 2016 via their 24/7 composite star rating, okay? 57% of all 5-stars were drafted. That's an average of about 33 a year. So if you're a 5-star, the data would say you got a 57% chance to be drafted into the NFL. 4-stars, 23%. There was 312 on average per year, 24/7 composite-wise. So you have a 23% chance of being drafted potentially. And then 3-star-wise, it drops all the way down to 6%, and then 2-star-wise down to 1%. There's so many more 3 and 2 stars that, again, that's why you want to recruit well, and because it's a numbers game where there's only, you know, 30 5-stars a year, 300 4-stars a year, and then there's 1,800 3-stars a year. I mean, you're looking at 53 times more 3-stars than there are a 5-star. That's why you want to recruit. And I think we're getting more efficient as an industry in terms of really seeing what the NFL wants, seeing how they can be used in the college football scene, and how do they translate to the NFL. I think we're getting a lot better at that as a company at 24/7 Sports. So, again, that's why star rankings matter is, again, you have a 57% chance if you're a 5-star compared to a 6% chance if you're a 3-star. I mean, it's just the numbers that are backing it up.
Right. And then to your point, right? So your class, it's very improbable that you're going to have all 5-stars. So, you know, from there to, you're going to fill the rest of your roster out with a number of 3-stars, et cetera. And then it comes down to talent development, right? Like, you have to be able to develop talent. That's something that, you know, Brewster got knocked for. He was able to bring in some high-ranked players, but it seemingly was unable to develop that talent. And it's probably the second most important thing right behind talent acquisition.
I would put, the final two are talent development and then talent deployment. So number one, how do you develop them? And then number three, how do you put them in position to be successful? And I think that's where people – and here in Minnesota think recruiting rankings mean nothing because Tim Brewster had these top 25 classes, yet Minnesota was inconsistent. They weren't great. Well, I mean, in our defense here as a star rating industry, Tim Brewster also changed offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, I think, every year of his every year he was here. So if you bring in, you know, this four-star guy, so say he's a four-star defensive end, and what you want him to be is this big guy that gets up the field, you know, he's a 5-7 technique and a 4-3. Well, then say you switch defensive coordinators to a 3-4.
Right.
Well, that guy doesn't have a home then, and you're developing a guy that doesn't really have a fit into your offense or defensive scheme. And so you look at what Minnesota has done here the last 3 years. Well, Kirk Ciarrocca is still here, still the same offensive system here going into year three. Joe Rossi isn't a whole lot different than Rob Smith. Minnesota is still going to be a base four down lineman team more times than not. So you still know what you're recruiting there. And then linebacker and safety and defensive back wise, it's all about the same philosophy. So you're getting guys that you want to do specific things in your specific defense or offense and where they would excel. I mean, if you, you know, we'll get into Minnesota's offensive line recruiting, but the consistent theme that you've seen since Brian Callahan has taken over is they want big athletic bodies that can really move. Because what Kirk Ciarrocca and Brian Callahan want to do is run a lot of zone. They want to run a lot of inside zone, what they did last year with Mo Ibrahim, and they want to expand that to outside zone. But to do that, you need these nimble offensive linemen that can get into space and they can do some things. You don't want to get the, you know, 6'3", 315-pound road grader. Now, I'm well aware that Daniel Faalele and Curtis Dunlap are both probably north of 340 pounds, but Daniel's also is 6'9", and Curtis is 6'5", 6'6", and they both have very, very good footwork. So it's, again, what I'm trying to put home here is the talent acquisition part, Minnesota's on the same tier, and now it's going to be about for Kirk Ciarrocca and the rest of the staff, and really about for the rest of the Big Ten West here is who is the best coaching staff that can develop talent and then put them in position to be successful? Because Mo Ibrahim wouldn't be successful in every offense in the Big Ten. He was successful in what Minnesota did last year for inside zone because that's what Minnesota recruited him to do. It's what he knows how to do. And if you know how to do it, you're going to more times than not be successful at it. Whereas you look at Joe Rossi defensively last year, he knew how to fix the problems that Minnesota were having. It wasn't the players that were, you know, it wasn't talent. It was their mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, he took things off the table for some, added responsibilities for others. And then you saw Minnesota's defense really come together those final four games of the year. Mm-hmm. So if the entire Big Ten West is recruiting at the same tier, now it's going to be about, well, who's got the best coaching staff? Because if you can develop them the best and you can put them in positions to be successful the best, you're probably going to be the best team in the Big Ten West.
Yeah, and you know, like we talked about before, you know, the talent acquisition is going to get either easier with winning, but so is talent deployment, right? Because if you're able to have an identity as a program, which I think in large part that's something that the Brewster era lacked, I think that the Kill era did a little bit better in terms of an identity. You know, they were going to play incredible defense, run the ball, and just don't turn it over, right? But if you can kind of start to select some of those players instead of having to recruit players, right, they're going to fit the scheme that you're trying to play or you're trying to implement. It makes things easier. But at the end of the day, sometimes you got to take the best athlete or the best player that's available and fit that player for fit your scheme to that player. And I think that we've seen both Ciarrocca and Rossi have a willingness to do that, right? Let's just get the best athletes we can get and put them in positions to succeed. But you know, long-term they want to have an identity and I think Flex made that abundantly clear. They want to have an identity.
And that's where I thought with the Jerry Kill staff, they could develop them and put them more times than not in position to be successful. They just couldn't recruit consistently
right
at a high enough level. Now, I think that they showed that they could do that defensively with David
right
Wilson, Devondre Campbell, Breann Boddy, Eric Murray. But offensively, they just couldn't recruit.
They couldn't get a quarterback.
Number one, they wouldn't recruit a quarterback. They would recruit an athlete
point
to play quarterback.
That's a good point.
Offensive line recruiting was an absolute dumpster fire. Wide receiver recruiting outside of one or two guys was a dumpster fire. And they could figure out some things at tight end and at running back. But just if you really don't know how to acquire the best talent and do it consistently, and that's where you're going to run into trouble. And so that's where my point being, PJ Fleck has done that here in back-to-back classes. highest class ratings back to back years, highest class averages, and they're putting themselves in a position to be competitive in the Big Ten West, which you as a Golden Gopher football fan, I think that's what you want. But Luke, let's kind of get into some of the names now.
Yeah, let's go to the talent acquisition. I know there was a big, you know, we'll have to get into the summer splash thing because it's been completely overwhelming the last number of days. But let's hit on some of the pre-summer splash, the pre-summer splash commits. There's a wide receiver out of Brooklyn. His name is Justin Bolito. What do you know about him, Ryan?
I know that he's a guy that Jim Panagos saw live. I know that he's a guy that PJ Fleck has not seen. I don't think PJ Fleck saw him live here this spring, but he's got the PJ Fleck seal of approval. And if Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman and Ottman Bell give you any kind of, if you're going to trust PJ Fleck and this staff at one position, folks, I think I would trust them at wide receiver, because Justin Bolito is someone that isn't the biggest guy in the world, but he is an outstanding route runner, someone that can really create space in a very tight window. And for a position where, in the slot where I project him to, I think he's going to be a guy that could potentially come in and help right away. Because once Tyler really graduates here this next fall and he goes off to the NFL, Rashad's going to stay on the outside. I think Ottman Bell is best on the outside. And I don't know that Demetrius Douglas has shown consistently that he can be that slot receiver for Minnesota. And so that's where you bring in a guy like Justin Bolito. He can compete with Jornell Brooks. But the question for Jornell Brooks now is, he's had back-to-back ACL tears. How does he continue to progress in his rehab? Is he going to be a guy that can still really contribute at a Division I level? And then Michael Brown-Stevens is still there in the slot, but he's a true freshman as well. So that's where I think that Bolito and then Michael Brown-Stevens could potentially make impacts for Minnesota in the slot here in 2020.
Okay, Cody Lindenberg, he's a linebacker from Anoka. He was a recent commit, you know, pre-summer.
He's a guy that I think I'm higher on than many. I think I'm probably higher on him than anybody else here in the industry here so far. When Cody Lindenberg got his name out there, I was at a Nike camp, I believe down in Kansas City area, is where people finally found out about him, where he had some tape out there, but schools were very hesitant. Well, he goes to this Nike combine and he puts up 100+ Nike Spark score. That really gets Minnesota's attention. They're able to get him on campus, see what he's like in person, meet his family. Joe Rossi goes and watches him work out, loves him. They offer him, get him committed. Well, I had a chance to see Cody Lindenberg twice at Gopher camps this past summer. And the dude can move extremely, extremely well. He's a guy at 6'2" that has very good athleticism, good length. But I think what impresses me most is his instincts. Watching him cover a tight end or cover a linebacker or just the angle he takes to potentially close off on a ball carrier, he knows what he's doing and he knows how to do it very well, and he doesn't slow down when he does it. So that's where we at 24/7 have already bumped him once. We bumped him from a 83 to an 86, still in that 3-star range. But I think that Cody has the athleticism to be an immediate impact guy. In fact, at one of the camps I was at, he had the fastest 40-yard dash there of anybody else. I mean, there were a bunch of corners, a bunch of wide receivers. The dude can move, and he can move very quickly. So I think, folks, if you're going to go try to watch a Gopher commit this fall, I'd head to Anoka to watch linebacker Cody Lindenberg.
Okay, Austin Henderson, he's a tight end from Nashville.
He is. Another guy that I saw at one of the Gopher camps. It was fun watching him go against Cody Lindenberg and then another linebacker commit that Minnesota has in Lucas Finnessy. He's a big body. You know, he's not he doesn't have a lot of weight on him right now. He's probably 6'5", 6'6". Long arms, but he's probably only 220, 230 pounds. And the nice thing for him is Minnesota's not really going to have to rush him until he's ready. They have Brevin Spanford, they have Jake Paulson, you have Ko Keefe. You have three guys there that are still going to be here come 2020. So you can get Austin Henderson into the weight room, develop him as an athletic body. And I just think that you're seeing Clay Patterson and Kirk Shiroka reshape this tight end room from kind of the Colton Beebe, Nathan Burch types, where they're really going to be blocking more times than not. Now you have the Brevin Spanfords, the Jake Paulsons, the Austin Hendersons, where they can be much more of a threat in the passing game and also provide some run support there.
All right, I'm ready for the international man of mystery here. Richard Ayakum, is that correct? Adyakum?
As far as I know, it's Richard Adyakum. Adyekum.
Adyekum, okay.
Adyekum, a cornerback from the Netherlands. You may be asking yourself, oh, the Gophers are going to the Netherlands now. We're going to Europe to get kids. What's the deal? Well, PJ Fleck and his staff want to be on the forefront of the changing world of college football recruiting. And I think the next step would be some kids coming over from the Europe. Now, Minnesota's got two European commits in their class, one being Richard. So the story is Minnesota was at a satellite camp down in Georgia. They saw him live. He's not the biggest guy in the world, probably 5'9", 150 pounds, but he moves extremely well, extremely fluid hips, very good with his ball skills. Minnesota offers him following camp. They're his first offer, and then Penn State joins, Rutgers joins. I think Cincinnati also joined in, but Adyekum wanted to be a Gopher. He came up from his camp tour that his European group was going to, came to Minnesota camp with them, and he committed. Again, he's a slot corner only. He's not the biggest guy in the world, so we'll see how that kind of plays out as Minnesota continues to shuffle their numbers.
All right, let's get into the summer splash. This is something, obviously, that they've affectionately called this recruiting period in some way, shape, or form. I'm assuming it's mostly for kind of some social media hype. There's been a number of videos, you know, what have you, that goes along with this. But really, what was the summer splash?
It was Minnesota's big recruiting visits. So Minnesota had two recruiting weekends, one on the 14th, 15th, 16th, and then 18th, 19th, and the 20th. Just what they named their recruiting event here for the summer, where they brought in 20-plus guys on official visits. And their big emphasis was on the fact that Minnesota fans, especially here in the metro area, are a fantastic fan base. They brought them to Target Field, home of the Twins, Target Center, home of the Minnesota Timberwolves, U.S. Bank Stadium, the Minnesota Vikings. And the point they were trying to make to them was, this is a metro area that loves sports. I mean, and I think you and I would agree with the fact that more people than not are really big into sports here in the metro area. And the fact that if you give them something to cheer for, they will come out. And I know that they were using the Minnesota Twins as an example where, I mean, I went to a game in early May, and there was probably 13,000 people there. Minnesota continues to win, and a month later, they're selling the place out. And that's where Minnesota was trying to tell these kids where, yeah, we may not have a lot of people in the stadium right now.
Right.
But if we have the season we think we're going to have in 19, and then, you know, use that as momentum going into 20, there's going to be a lot of people there supporting you, making the atmosphere incredible to play in.
Right.
And so that was one of the big things that this coaching staff tried to point out to each and every one of these recruits.
So real quick, a quick question. You know, in the past, we saw these official, because I'm assuming these were official visits. Most of these Correct. Official visits coming, you know, towards like much closer to signing day. And a lot of the guys would come pre that, right? It'd be like a big recruiting weekend that way. Was this moved up because of the early signing day, or is this kind of a whole new strategy that they're trying to employ?
This is in correlation with the early signing day. And then, you know, these summer official visits really are for the Big Ten schools. And that's why
sure.
I don't think it's also a coincidence you've seen Big Ten schools recruit a lot better in recent years since the summer official visits have been put into effect. Because I bet you half of the kids that I talked to prior to these visits were from the South. And I'd say 80% of them, I'd ask them, what do you know about Minnesota? Well, they're like, isn't it cold there year round? That's the only thing I know. And so they're able to come sure. up here. They're able to experience 70s and 80s up here in Minneapolis, which it is for most of the summer. They're able to go to Coach Fleck's lake house, go out on his boat and see, huh, Minnesota's not a barren tundra like all the SEC schools tell us it is year-round. And so that's why I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Wisconsin and Iowa, that Minnesota are recruiting at as high of a level as we've seen in recent years, because the summer official visits allow Minnesota to bring, and these Big Ten schools in general, bring up the kids from Florida, Georgia, Texas, and let them see that, hey, it's actually warm up here and it's not bad. So, again, I think these summer official visits have absolutely helped Minnesota and absolutely helped the Big Ten West recruit at a much higher level.
All right, so we got 13 commits since Flag Day, June 14th. You have a note in here that says this is pretty typical PJ Fleck. So anybody, if you're listening in your car and you're you're not buckled up, first buckle up because it is, you know, the law, number one. But then number two, we got a number of names to get through here. Ryan's going to blitz through them, and it's going to be a lot of information to download. So if you're listening to this at two times the speed or like even 1.5, you might want to slow it down because I imagine he's going to go pretty quick here.
Yeah, 13 commits if my University of Minnesota math is correct, which in the 13 commits here in the last 12 days, and I think there was a span where there was 8 commits in 48 hours, which for my future carpal tunnel, not great, but for people of Gopher Illustrated that kept clicking F5, 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 or were on their phone refreshing, it was a lot of fun, and there's a lot of names to get through, so as Luke said, I'm not going to try to put a ton of information into each one of them. That's where Gopher Illustrated comes in handy, where I've talked with the coach, we've given our analysis, and I've talked with the kid. But there's a lot of names to get through, so Luke, let's start it.
Okay, Dylan McGill, noted as an athlete and wide receiver, looks to me like he's a 3-star.
He is someone that doesn't have a great offer list right now because he plays high school quarterback at Mesquite High School in Texas. And I think the interesting thing to note here is that his head coach is a kid or is a guy by the name of Jeff Fleener, someone that was the offensive coordinator for a long time at Allen High School. If you know anything about high school football, Allen High School is a top five college football just monster with producing high level Division I talent. This guy was the offensive coordinator for Kyler Murray. You may have heard of him, heard he went first in that NFL draft that happens. He was the high school offensive coordinator for Greg Little, a 5-year NFL receiver now. Jalen Guyton, who's now with a wide receiver with the Cowboys. So this guy knows talent. And I was talking to him this past week, and you know, he was telling me that Dylan has the talent to be up there with those guys. He just has to play quarterback for us because he's the best athlete we have. And I need him to have the ball in his hand 30, 35 times a game to make the best decision.
Right. And that's not very uncommon to have your best athlete play quarterback in high school anyway.
Correct. And so how Minnesota even saw him was PJ Fleck and some of the Gopher coaching staff was down at a satellite camp down in Texas. Dylan McGill came. They worked him out as a wide receiver. PJ Fleck offered instantaneously following camp. They got him on an unofficial visit, I believe that next weekend, and were able to get him locked down before more Texas schools really took a look at him, and McGill attended more summer camps as a wide receiver. So I know that Jeff Fleener, the head coach there, is extremely high on him. I know PJ Fleck has the seal of approval there. And as I said earlier in this podcast, if you're going to trust this staff's evaluations at one position and one position only, I think I would do it at wide receiver.
All right, let's look a little bit at we talked a little bit about offensive line, how they're looking for big guys to move really well in space. I have to think that Martez Lewis fits that mold exactly at 6'7", 320 pounds.
You know, you'd think this guy would be a big lumbering guy, wouldn't move well. You put on the tape, man, this kid moves well. I know that from talking with some people close to Brian Callahan's thinking, he was able to go and see him live a couple times this spring. And it's funny to talk to the high school coaches about Martez Lewis, especially his own at Marysville, Indiana. He's like, this is a guy that 2 years ago was like 6'3", 220 pounds. Now he's grown 4 inches, put on 100 pounds, and he still moves really well for a guy of that size anyway. And Minnesota knows that this is maybe a guy that isn't going to be a day one contributor because he's going to have to continue to add strength. But the foot speed and the athleticism and the quickness that he has at 6'7", 230 pounds is something that you really can't find very often. Now, I know that Indiana in-state school for him had offered him, and they're pretty pissed that he's going to Minnesota. So Minnesota is able to get Martez Lewis there, someone that's going to start at tackle. As most of Casey Collier, Martez Lewis, and another guy we'll talk about a little bit later, or I guess next here, in Ariante Ursiri, they're all going to start a tackle. And then again, if they can't make it a tackle, they'll just slide inside. But they have the size, the length, and the athleticism to start a tackle.
Yeah, the aforementioned Ursiri, he's a 6'5", 265. So, I mean, obviously as the height maybe isn't quite doesn't carry quite the weight. But what do you see from him from an athletic perspective?
So the story goes that Ursiri didn't have a Power 5 offer until earlier this month. And what happened was he went to the Lindenwood camp in Missouri where, I don't know, 50, 75 Division I programs were there. And Minnesota saw him live then, were able to see him. You know, they had watched him on tape. They weren't able to see him this spring. They were able to see him go against some of the other guys at the camp that were Division I talents. I'm like, hey, this guy's pretty good. Again, he's 6'5", 265 right now. He's got the frame to get to 290, 300 pounds. He's got the arm length and the athleticism to stick a tackle. Minnesota's the first offer, and then Kansas and Kansas State jump in. And he decides he's going to visit Minnesota, and he decides he's not going to go to Mr. Kleiman at Kansas State or Les Miles at Kansas, both of which I think are doing a pretty good job recruiting here so far. So, again, you look at another guy, what is the common denominator here that Brian Callahan is looking for with Collier, Ursary, Martez Lewis? All big guys with a lot of length that are athletic. They're all going to start a tackle. They all have a little bit of a mean streak, and Minnesota needs tackle bodies there. And because, again, we'll talk about it next week. They're still searching for who the left tackle is going to be. Daniel Fa'alele, I'd be surprised if he's here after the 2020 season. You need to get these guys into a weight program for 18, 24 months before they can really be counted on at the Big Ten level. And that's where Brian Callahan is extremely happy right now with Lewis Ursary and Casey Collier.
All right, before we jump into these summer splash commits on defense, maybe we'll start with defensive line. I want to get your perspective a little bit on Pangos as a as the new defensive line coach. He's obviously a change from, was it West? I can't remember his first name.
Marcus West.
Man, Marcus West. So, you know, what is he going to be looking for in defensive linemen?
Yeah, I had a great conversation here in June with some people close to the Gopher coaching staff while I was at these camps and some people close to Jim Panagos' thinking. And what was portrayed to me was that Jim Panagos is looking for certain traits. He's looking for explosion. He's looking for twitch. And he's looking for a lot of length because those are all things you can't teach. If you have those three things, Panagos and this Minnesota staff believes that Panagos can develop you. Because you look at Panagos' recent stops, UCF and then Temple most recently. At Temple, they have had three defensive linemen drafted in the last 2 years, and they have another two coming back that are going to be drafted in 2020. So clearly Jim Panagos knows what he's looking for, and it obviously translates well to the NFL. So you look at what Minnesota's gotten with their four defensive line bodies here. It's no coincidence that each one of them has explosion, they have twitch, and they have a lot of length.
All right, we're going to jump into our next international man of mystery. This is a German committed defensive lineman. I think it's Malay Kreider. Is that right?
Malay Kreider.
Malay Kreider. I never took German.
Neither did I. I've taken some Gaelic from Ireland there, and I've taken Spanish. So my German and your German are probably terrible. If you'd like to correct us, just tweet us at Ryan Burns MN or at, I think you're Buer Luke, correct?
Luke Buer.
So Malay Kreider, a German defensive end, and you're going to ask me how in the freaking world they find this kid. Well, they saw him at a University of Buffalo camp, one they were invited to where that European tour, the European group that I mentioned earlier, was performing at. And Minnesota sends out Clay Patterson, Jim Panagos. They're able to see him live, Malay Kreider. And immediately following camp, they offered him and they flew him and his family in from Germany that next week for the summer splash. I believe that was the last camp Kreider participated in because he got injured at the next camp. And then I think it was an injury that was going to keep him out a couple weeks. And he wasn't able to go with him the rest of the tour and work out. So he flew home to Germany. So he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's, from what I've been told, 6'3", 235 pounds. But he's very twitchy. He's very long. And I think the interesting thing to note here is he's turning 21 next month. And when he gets on campus in January, as a guy who's going to have 5 years of eligibility, he's going to be already 21 years old. So he's already going to have another 3 years of physical development over the rest of the guys. And so if you're able to get a guy that has twitch and explosion, and you're 6'3", and you're already 21, I mean, we're talking about a guy that could potentially be here until he's 26. Now, I don't know about you, Luke, but I'd rather have a 25 or 26-year-old defensive end going against Big Ten offensive tackles than a 19-year-old. But that's just me.
Yeah, that will be interesting. I had no idea he was that old already. All right, so we've got another defensive end. This would be Gage Keys from Ohio. Pretty big dude at 6'5", 240. What do you know about him?
I know that this is – if you're looking for a guy that replaces Aaron Witt in this class in terms of skill set and physique, here's your guy, Gage Keys. This was a full-time basketball player that played a little bit of football as a sophomore, played it as a junior, but then from talking with his high school coach again, he came to his high school coach after the season in November and was like, hey, I think my ceiling's a lot higher here. I'm going to fully dedicate myself to the weight room now. I'm going to fully dedicate myself to becoming the best football player I can be. And apparently, according to the head football coach, he's made a lot of strides here in the last 6 months. A kid that's still growing into his body, still 6'5". He's bulked all the way up to 240 pounds now. I know that Jim Panagos and some of the other people on the staff, I think he's extremely athletic. Now, this one's still more of a projection, just like Aaron Witt was going to be. Aaron Witt, another guy who's 6'5", 230, 235. But the projection is going to be, what does he look like in 18, 24 months once you get him into a collegiate football program in terms of nutrition, in terms of in the weight room? They think this can be a guy that could be like Asezi Otemiwu was, where he had the size and the length, but once they really put the weight on him, I think you'll see this fall, he has the look of what a Big Ten defensive end is going to look like, and I know the Gophers are extremely high on his potential.
Did you change how you pronounce is it Otemiwu? I have
Asezi Otemiwu, just like my other favorite defensive end name, Winston Dilady-Boudere.
Yeah, I obviously
can't wait to hear Sid try to pronounce some of these names. That's all I know.
Yeah, I obviously have been saying that wrong forever, but that I digress. Okay, another defensive end, Claude Larkins. Looks like he's a guy from Florida.
He is. He's a defensive end, tight end body from South Florida there, someone that his spring offer list looks pretty good. Now, again, an offer list is an offer list to a point where what if these guys got offered by these schools 24 months ago? Well, these are all schools that had offered him within the last 2 months. We're talking about Kentucky, Ole Miss, Mizzou, and he even picked up an offer, I think, about a week before he visited Minnesota from Washington State. Now, you'd be maybe thinking, well, why the heck should I care about Washington State? Well, he got offers as a defensive end there. And you may know the defensive coordinator there, Mr. Tracy Claes. So he's a two-way guy that had another bigger guy at 6'4", 230. Someone that, again, explosion, twitch, and length. Something that Jim Panagos really thinks and puts a lot of stock into. Someone that Jim Panagos went and saw twice here during the spring. Really, really wanted him. So he pushed to get him up on a June official visit. And the PJ Fleck and staff were able to really close the door there here so far. So he's going to play tight end and defensive end for his high school, but Minnesota sees him as a quick twitch defensive end for them.
I got to imagine if he got an offer from Claes, he can play the wide nine. So we know he's got that under wraps.
There you go.
defensive tackle Ali Saad.
Ali Saad.
There's two A's in a row. How do you get Saeed? Okay.
I'm just telling you that's how he told me to pronounce it.
That's fine. I'm sorry. Looks like he's a 6'4", 250-pounder.
He is. He's a Minnesota's defensive tackle commit for this cycle. At 6'4", 250, I tweeted out, you know, Minnesota had the commits on a boat, and Ali was the guy that was in the picture. And people were like, wow, what kind of position does he play? I'm like, defensive tackle. And I was like, well, he looks so thin. Well, on the visit, he was currently participating in, or I guess practicing Ramadan. So he's fasting during the day, only getting nutrition at night, and Minnesota's not entirely very worried about that. They have another player on the roster. You may have heard of him before. I may have talked about him before. Mohammed Ibrahim, he also participates in Ramadan. And so Minnesota's got an entire nutrition plan for Mr. Ibrahim to make sure that he's getting the nutrients and the different things that he needs to not lose a ton of weight when he goes into Ramadan there. So Minnesota's not worried about Saeed losing any weight once he starts to go into that. But the nice thing about this 6'4", 250-pounder is he's only 16. And so Minnesota is like, well, this kid should technically be a sophomore right now, but he's a junior going into his senior year. And he is another guy where if you pull up the tape, You know, if you search Ali Saeed Huddle, I mean, you're going to watch a guy that's in the back is in the backfield a ton. And in, from talking with his high school coach this past week, and a tremendously hard worker, but something that Jim Panagos really wants, especially as Minnesota tries to develop something resembling an interior pass rush, quick twitch, length, and explosion. And then if you pull up the tape, what are you going to find? Quick twitch, length, and explosion. And it's also nice that Minnesota is able to beat out Northwestern, Illinois, Indiana, among other schools there for Mr. Saeed.
All right. Another name I'm going to struggle with, but linebacker Itavians. I'm not Brown.
Itavian Brown.
Itavian. Wow. I wasn't even close. But he looks like he's actually a fairly highly rated recruit.
He is. He's the highest rated recruit via the 24/7 composite. I think he's like 0.2 away from being a composite four-star. I think some other recruiting sites have him as a four-star. All I can tell you is he's going to be a fantastic athlete. I know that some schools see him as a wide receiver. Some schools see him as an outside linebacker. Some see him as a defensive end. I think, or I know that Minnesota is planning on starting Itavian at outside linebacker for his team at Lutheran North, a place that has a lot of Division I talent. Historically, Minnesota was able to get Devion Harris from their rush defensive end last year. I think this is a kid that could see – I think you could see him bumped up to a four-star in 24/7 following his senior season, because it sounds like from talking with his high school coach, he's going to get a lot more reps defensively. And if he – I know that we're going to see him live this fall. And he's someone at 6'3", is only 205, 210 pounds right now, doesn't have a lot of nutrition options at home right now, if that makes sense. And so Minnesota's not worried about getting him up to 230, 235 pounds. But at 6'3", he's got a lot of length. He's very explosive. And he's got 35-inch arms, which is unbelievably long. I mean, that's longer than some offensive tackle arms. So you have a guy that's got a tremendous wingspan that had an offer list from places such as Florida State, Notre Dame, Missouri, you know, some other places that really coveted him, and Minnesota's able to get him locked down here just yesterday.
All right, so defensive backs, they got four defensive backs here. Let's start with Michael Dixon. This is somebody that you've noted has a very high Nike Spark score. Maybe you can review the Nike Spark score quick before you jump into Michael Dixon.
Yeah, we actually have five defensive backs to talk about here. So they have six defensive backs total. We all already talked about Ad Yakum from the Netherlands there. But so the Nike Spark score is a combination of your 40, your shuttle, your vertical, how far you can, you know, generate power with their powerball toss, amongst other things. And then they use each one of those metrics to kind of combine to make this Nike Spark score. And anything over 100, you're in the top 2% of high school athletes across the country and really across, you know, of all football players out there. And so you look at Michael Dixon, he got on Minnesota's radar when they saw that he put up a 119 Spark score. And that, it's just silly what he was able to do at the 40, the shuttle, the vertical, amongst other things there. And he's at 6'1". And Minnesota was able to see him live. They see him as a big safety target for them. I know that he was the top safety target on the board for them. Now, his offer list doesn't necessarily match his 24/7 rating right now, where Minnesota's among a few Power 5 schools right now to offer him. We have him rated as an 87 right now, because those size, length, and athleticism traits are just, once again, things you can't really teach. And so I know that from talking with some people on the Gopher staff that they believe that Michael Dixon here from Georgia is going to be the Rashad Bateman of this class, where he's going to blow up this fall. Now, I know from talking with some people familiar with Dixon's recruitment, when Dixon recruited, committed to Minnesota, Mr. Malzahn there from Auburn, I believe, or whoever the head coach is at Auburn nowadays, tried to get him to come visit Auburn. And Michael said, I'm good. You know, I'm happy at Minnesota. So the belief was that if he would have visited Auburn, they would have offered. But Dixon said he's good with Minnesota. And so we're not even in July yet, and there's going to be some recruiting battles still to be had.
All right, so another defensive back, Abner Dubar.
Abner Dubar, yes. You're getting better with these enunciations, Luke.
I don't know. I'm seeing some of the list here, and I'm a little concerned still.
He's actually hashtag one of us, Luke.
No way.
Because he was born in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, and he actually lived here with his family, I think, up until, well, shoot. These kids are getting born in the 2000s now, so I'm starting to feel incredibly old as a 90s kid. But he lived here, I think, until he was 6 or 7, until they moved to Texas. So another guy with an outstanding Nike Spark score, someone with a 4.51 electric 40 time with 39-inch vertical. He held a Clay's offer as a DB at Michigan State, a Mel Tucker offer at Colorado. If you don't know who Mel Tucker is, he was the Georgia defensive coordinator for a long, long time. He's now the head coach at Colorado. He wanted him very bad, and then Baylor was also pretty pissed because they were making a late push here to try and land him. Another big safety body for Joe Harris-Simiak. And again, if the Joe Harris-Simiak safety mold is anything that you can glean, they want big athletic guys that are very quick twitch and able to come downhill. And that's what both Michael Dixon and Abner Dubar are.
All right, so Benjamin, this is where I'm going to struggle. So here
Anawuzu.
We go. Oh, come on. You didn't give me a chance to try. Okay, Anawuzu. Benjamin Anawuzu.
A defensive back from the same high school as Claude Larkins, Minnesota's defensive end commit. Someone that Nebraska was pushing very hard to get him on an official visit this past weekend. And once Anawuzu committed to Minnesota, he's like, this is the place for me. I don't need to visit the Cornhuskers. So Minnesota had him on campus this past spring. I know that Anawuzu was very high on Minnesota, but Minnesota wanted to see how he moved around this spring because he missed his entire junior year with a hamstring injury. He, I think, had a grade 2 strain on it, sidelined him. He didn't have any junior film. So a kid that they were able to get a live eval on here during May, so was a bunch of other schools. He had a pretty good offer list as well, and they were able to get him up, get him on an official visit, get his parents up here, get him committed. So I think he likely starts as a cornerback, but he also does have the position flexibility to move to safety. But another guy that I think could get a ratings bump once we see some senior film, because, again, you miss your entire junior film. We don't really have a lot to evaluate off of. So I know we're going to have some guys down there to see him live, and then we'll also see what a senior film looks like.
All right, Jalen Glaze looks like he had a handful of SEC offers, Texas A&M, Georgia, Tennessee. He's the next defensive back commit from Florida.
Yeah, a spring offer list. And I keep telling you a spring offer list because these are offers that have come in the last few months as schools have been out to see them live. So he had spring offers from places that you may have heard of, that place called Texas A&M, a place called the University of Georgia in Tennessee. And I know Tennessee was pretty pissed when he committed because they thought he was going to go visit there. And Glaze said, nah, I'm good at Minnesota. So, again, another guy that Minnesota wanted badly, a corner that has very good ball skills, a corner that has a lot of length at 5'10", 5'11", and he's also not afraid to put his nose and try to pop you at the line of scrimmage. So we'll have to see. I think this is going to be a guy that Minnesota is going to have to hold on to this fall because I think he's going to get some pressure. I wouldn't be surprised if in-state schools like Florida State, Miami, Florida come after him hard after the fall. But I'm also going to be intrigued to see how academics look come the fall as well.
All right, Victor Plesser, please, another defensive back, this one out of Georgia. What do we know about him?
He's one that Rod Chance wanted very, very badly. Someone that Rod was able to see during the spring. Now, Victor had some offers from Big Ten schools, ACC schools among them, but Minnesota really wanted to see what he looked like this spring. And then once Rod Chance was able to see him, he was a guy that he was going to Joe Rossi and PJ Fleck pounding the table for, saying, this is a guy that's got a lot of great ball skills, a guy that really knows how to read a receiver and make a play on the ball. He's not the biggest guy in the world at 5'10", but he's a pure corner and one that Rod Chance really wanted to add.
All right, so I guess that leaves us. I mean, that kind of wraps up the summer splash. But, I mean, what's left? I mean, we're sitting here. It's almost July, right? And what's left for this Gopher recruiting staff until basically they hit that early signing day?
Well, we're sitting at 21 commits right now. Minnesota is, anyway. And there's some very interesting portal battles that I think are taking place right now. I know they're taking place right now. and both with four-star kids, one of them being the top in-state player in this class for Minnehaha Academy there, Caden Johnson, who was fresh off his Wisconsin official visit. And from what I've been told, Wisconsin is playing the you don't have a lot of time game. And if you wait a long time, we're just not going to wait for you. Now, Wisconsin has four outside linebackers already committed in their class. Minnesota's got two, maybe three. And Caden just took an official visit there this past weekend. From everything I've been told with people familiar with his recruitment, it's going to shape up to be a Minnesota versus Wisconsin battle right now. Now, the longer this drags on, where Caden was at Minnesota as recently as June 9th, and I was standing there at camp, I saw him talk to Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin. If you want to read what he said to me, you can go to gopherillustrated.com. It's on there. But again, it's going to be Minnesota or Wisconsin right now. This isn't a kid I think leaves the Midwest. He's been to Minnesota, I think, twice or three times in the last 6-7 weeks. He has not taken an official visit here. But Wisconsin is going to play the card where spots are filling up. And Minnesota's playing the card where, hey, our spots are filling up, but we're going to leave a spot open for you regardless. So I'm going to be very curious to see how things play out here, but I do think it'll be Minnesota or Wisconsin. And then the other name to know is a four-star wide receiver from Kansas by the name of Daniel Jackson. He's taking official visits to Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa State this month. Now, from what I've been told, I don't think Iowa State's a big player here. I think it's going to be Minnesota or Wisconsin here. And Gopher Illustrated members are well aware that I think things are trending the Gophers' way. Why do I say that? Well, there's some intel behind that, but for you to glean that kind of information, it's a dollar to join at gopherillustrated.com, Luke.
Yeah, that's a shameless plug right there. That was pretty good. I see, you know, we have a preseason All-American punter, but his span or his lifespan on the team is here very short. So what are they going to do at punter going forward?
I've also heard that they're going to potentially take a scholarship punter in this class, and maybe he's going to be from the international variety as well.
I love these international men of mystery.
Trust me, this is going to be a man of mystery. We'll see how it plays out, but I do think Minnesota's – again, I think that he should be a, you know, a maroon shirt type of deal where walk on for a year, then we'll put you on scholarship. But, again, we'll see who the punter is, but I do think Minnesota uses a scholarship punter in this class yet. They also still have former Minnehaha product Terry Lockett out there, a kid that is a high 3-4-star kid. I think it's going to be Minnesota or Michigan State here. Still a take at Minnesota right now. But I know that Michigan State feels very strongly that they're going to land Mr. Lockett. We'll see how that plays out here this month. And so the theme here is it's going to be best player available for those final few spots. I mean, Minnesota's not taking the quarterback in this cycle. They have Ethan already locked down for 2021. They already have four underclassmen scholarship quarterbacks there. They already have Kai Thomas at running back. He's the only one they're going to take there. So you kind of have the positional flexibility of sorts to say, with these final spots, if we have high-level talent that wants to come in, well, then hell yeah, we're going to take them. It's BPA at this point. So the question then becomes, how in the world do they sign 25 this class? Because I guess technically they only got like 12, 13 spots open. Well, I've asked that question to the people who need to answer that, and their answer to me is, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out.
It always works itself out.
It always somehow works itself out, so we'll kind of see how it goes.
What I want to know is I didn't see any mention of a Jalen Suggs, and you just said there's no quarterback that's going to be taken. So, I mean, how's that going to work?
You're just doing this to get me going.
I'm not trying to get you going.
I would be absolutely shell-shocked, flabbergasted, whatever kind of vernacular you'd like me to use, if Jalen Suggs ever steps foot on a collegiate football field in a meaningful manner. I would be frankly shocked if he doesn't go to Gonzaga to play basketball at this point, but I'm not counting on Jalen Suggs playing football at the collegiate level. If he wants to do that, and that's what he decides to do this fall, then I think Minnesota has as good a shot as any, a.k.a. Richard Pitino does, thanks to P.J. Fleck there. But until he comes out and says, I'm playing college football, I'm going to assume that the top five 2020 basketball player that he is a much higher ceiling on the basketball court than he does the football court. He's going to probably play football, so I'm just not even going to go into it any further.
All right. I tried to get you going there, but apparently that was...
Yeah, thanks for that. Thank you.
Didn't quite work. All right.
Well, I appreciate you, Luke.
Yes, I know you do. All right. We want to thank everybody for listening. You stuck with us for nearly an hour and a half. Really appreciate it. Like Ryan said, we're going to get going here. On a more frequent basis. So, keep your phones and your headphones ready, as you'll be checking your aggregator more often. I want to thank you for listening. I don't know if you have any parting words, Mr. Burns.
Yeah, we're going to get going here after the fourth. I think we're going to let the fourth come and go and let people kind of get settled into their summers. And then we'll get some offensive talk going next week. After the fourth, and I know that we also have a very exciting announcement for this podcast in terms of an event we're going to have going for late July with potentially one of the Gopher coaches. So I know we're excited to kind of get into more details there in a couple weeks. And then if you're interested in becoming one of our sponsors here for the upcoming August to December time period, feel free to shoot me an email. I believe it's burnsryanmn@gmail.com. Again, this is a podcast that has done very well here in recent years, and I know we're looking to get into some more sponsors here for the podcast here. But we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you can, give us a rating, review on iTunes, Stitch, or whatever podcasting form you found us on. And if you also could tell a friend, again, there's not a lot of Gopher football talk on these airwaves that for a football team that I think is going to be pretty good this fall deserves more attention. So if you could tell a friend about us, we greatly appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and go Gophers.